You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. And we are very honored tonight to have Mingus Mapps on. Mingus is a candidate for city council here in Portland. And in order to respect FCC equal access laws, we will also be inviting Chloe Udaly on. Mingus, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here. I'm delighted to talk about this important issue.
It's great to have you on. And congratulations on your campaign. It sounds like it's going really well for you.
It's been a real journey and a ton of fun, and I want to thank everyone who's volunteered and helped out or just taken a moment to pay attention to this race. I really do think this race will help determine the future of our city, so it's real important, and I hope everyone can take a moment to tune in and find the candidate who's right for you.
So this is Prison Pipeline, and of course we talk about issues related to policy, especially policy related to what's happening right now. And you know, there's been this movement for Black Lives, which has just been amazing. It's been going for, by the time this airs, it will have been going for almost 90 days. And you know, people are just very concerned about how the police are treating people of color here in Portland and around the country. And I was just wondering if you could comment on that.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, this is a remarkable moment. You know, Portland has not seen anything like this, and I think it's history, and I think it's even unique in American history. I think this is a sign of Portlanders and I think the American public reaching a tipping point in their thinking about issues around race and policing in particular. And it's also a really important moment for me. You know, I'm an African American and a single dad with two young kids. In many ways, this conversation is exactly about people like me. You know, this is kind of a conversation about how we police Black male bodies, and it's an interesting moment because about 5% of Portlanders are African Americans. So you have about 2.5% of Portlanders who are kind of Black men. But on the other hand, you have the whole city kind of focused in on how we treat this group that is who I am. And so I do think spend a lot of time thinking about what this moment means, both to me and for society. And I have complex feelings. You know, obviously, this issue matters to me deeply, both because it literally determines how I live in our society and the degree to which I'm free or unfree or safe or not safe. I'm a dad of, you know, young brown boys, and so they are going to inherit the world that we create now. And I'll tell you, I think my oldest kid was born essentially right as Barack Obama was being inaugurated, so a March birthday. And I remember at that time just being so optimistic and thinking, oh wow, there are so many bad things that have happened in American history that won't be part of your life. But here we are, 11 years later, whatnot, and you realize, you know, the march towards justice is uneven, and there's a lot of work to do, and the work that we certainly have not achieved a colorblind, racist-free society. And that makes me deeply sad. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I am incredibly optimistic and so grateful to see so many Portlanders come out to support the rights of people of color and to demand accountability for the police department. I think that's really important. At the same time, I am, deeply disturbed and saddened by the violence that we see out there, the excessive force that I think we see often on the police side. But, I do think that we have to call out violence on all sides. As an African-American, I believe that, racism fundamentally rests upon a politics of violence. And so as long as violence is part of our politics, I don't think we're ever really going to overcome racism. So I know it's hard, but I think one of the things that we want to do if we want to have a really truly anti-racist movement is somehow figure out how we talk about the future of our city while at the same time having no tolerance for race or for violence, whether it comes from the police department or whether it comes from kids on the street who have just had too much.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that the city of Portland needs to do to address systemic racism within the police department?
Oh, sure. Well, in some ways this is easy, and in some ways this is hard. I don't think there is a debate in Portland about the role of racism in our police department. I think there is a Portland consensus that there should be no place for racism in our police department, and I think that has to be just one of our fundamental reforms, is to have a zero tolerance policy for racism in our police bureaus. And then I think we also have to embrace other common sense reforms like banning chokeholds. I think we systematically need to audit every one of our police programs to look to see if they are disproportionately impacting people of color. And if they are, we need to, I think, change those programs.
What do you think the role of the civilian review board should be in community review of police actions?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a rich and important territory. I think the problem that Portland has been one of the fundamental policing problems that we've been struggling with as a city is how do we provide civilian oversight and accountability, especially when things go wrong in the arena of policing. One of the things I've heard, I think on all sides, is that our current systems of police accountability have not worked effectively and don't work well enough. I think one of the differences, the real difference I see is sort of the diagnosis that each side might say as to why our policies aren't working well. But within that, I think there's consensus that we're not doing well enough. We need to make change. And until we figure out a civilian accountability system, policing in Portland is not going to be right. I won't lie to you, I don't know what the perfect police accountability civilian oversight system looks like. But I think that one of the lessons of this moment is that we have to have this discussion. Commissioner Hardesty has put together a proposal, which I think is great in many ways. It gets the discussion going. I'll tell you also the truth. I don't understand every aspect of that proposal, and I hope that we have a public discussion about what's in there. I know it definitely, clearly, significantly strengthens civilian oversight. I think there are also some just policy and legal issues. Is this going to immediately wind up in court being challenged for the next 5 years? And if so, maybe this is a moment where we can kind of take care of those technical issues that we know that we're going to come up. But more importantly, I think it's important that, despite all those kind of inside baseball things, I think that what we really need to do now is have a public discussion about, what is the relationship between the public and the police. So I really applaud that. And I think that that's a discussion that, we haven't had enough. And one of the things that I see now, on the streets, and I think even from business owners and every Portlander, is that they feel a dissatisfaction with the policing system we have. I don't see anyone who says if we started from scratch today, we would want the public safety system that Portland has kind of stumbled into over the years. And that's kind of broadly what I want to get Portland to do? You know, and part of that discussion is definitely what does police accountability look like? I think another piece is, you know, what is our police department for? And, you know, I think one of Portland's problems over the years is that we have asked the police department to do too much and provided them with not enough training for what we actually said. Them out on. So for example, I believe right now 49% of the 911 calls that the police department responds to are essentially houseless calls. Folks who are living on the streets and are going through some sort of mental health crisis. In other words, what we've done is we've made our outreach workers on mental health issues to be, you know, armed police officers. And it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that that often doesn't work very well. And it, you know, it's bad. I think that's bad public policy. Number one, it's bad service. The person that we're responding to isn't getting the kind of aid they need. And it's also, I think, a misuse of public dollars and public servants in that, you know, if you've spent any time actually talking to rank and file police officers who respond to 911 calls, they get that the system is broken. You know, they're the people who have to respond to, you know, this person dealing with schizophrenia, and the only tools that the people of Portland have given them is a gun and a flashlight. You know, that's ridiculous. We need to get smarter. That's why I'm excited about programs like our street response teams that we're trying to pilot out in Lentz, where instead of sending an armed officer to respond to mental health issues that you know, come into the 911 system, we try sending a social service, someone trained in social services and someone trained in conflict de-escalation. And the emphasis there is not, you know, what you're trying to do in that situation is to actually connect that person to services that would fix their issue, as opposed to either taking them downtown to jail for 4 hours or telling them to move along, in which case they just kind of move 100 paces up the street to a new place and nothing gets solved. On the other hand, we have spent literally thousands of dollars every day on interactions like that. It's just time to be smarter and more humane and I think more true to our values.
Since the murder of George Floyd, here in Portland, the city council voted to eliminate SROs and most funding for the reduction task force, most funding for the transit police.
Yep.
Your opponent, Chloe Udaly, actually voted against the monetary amount. We needed to cut funding to the Portland Police Bureau by $50 million. And where do you stand on that issue?
Well, you know, I think that we do need to not only cut the police budget, I think we need to fundamentally reorganize policing. You know, and that's, I think, what the moment is. As I think I said earlier, one of, I think, Portland's failures is that we've made the police department the center of our public safety system. I think that they should be at the table when we think about public safety, but we make a mistake when we make them our first responders, and frankly, in many situations, our only responders. But it's also, I think it's important that we have a plan and have a vision. You know, I think it's a question that Portlanders I think need to ask themselves is, you know, we made a significant cut to the gun violence reduction task force, and the next month shootings in Portland skyrocketed to the levels we haven't seen since the crack wars of the 1990s. Now, I'm not saying that those two things are connected, but they're close enough that we need to actually kind of think seriously about the consequences of the policies that we make. I think we all agree that we want to reinvent policing, where we want to emphasize, restorative justice and prevention. So that means, you know, that definitely means kind of shifting resources from the police bureau's budget to other budgets. I think we need to think carefully about what those other programs are. I think I am mostly fine with the $15 million in cuts that we've seen. The conversation has shifted to, are we ready to do $50 million in cuts? Maybe we should do more than $50 million in cuts. But I think where we should begin this discussion is thinking about the actual, what we want our public safety system to look like, you know, because I think what we have done at this moment is actually picked a number which is weirdly round. It kind of suggests to me that this hasn't actually been thought through particularly deeply, but rather is trying to resonate for symbolic reasons. and that's fine. On the other hand, when we actually make these changes, I think that should be driven by a vision and plan, and we should have systems for measuring what we do and evaluating what we do, because frankly, in the arena of public safety, failure has dire consequences. When you break a public safety system, the people who get hurt first and most deeply are people of color and poor people. So if we screw this up, we're actually going to wind up hurting the people we really want to help. But I don't think this is a problem. I think this is just kind of basic good government. And Portland has kind of taken an exit from traditional forms of policymaking, which kind of breaks my heart. You know, I'm a longtime Portlander, and one of the reasons why we didn't get into my bio here, but I'm a political scientist. I study and teach urban politics, got my PhD at Cornell University. And one of the reasons why I went through that career path is I grew up in Portland at a time when we were just really good at running and inventing what cities mean. You know, I'm kind of out of the Vera Katz era and the Bev Stein era. So, you know, we managed to stop highways and build an amazing public transportation system, integrated the ideas that bikes could be part of the city to just really creative, you know, created the food cart scene. We've reinvented ourselves so many times and have done so many creative things that we really have become a beacon of the world. You know, if you go back 10 years, like for better or worse, there's no doubt that like the world's attention was drawn to Portland. But today, no one is looking to Portland because we are good at urban policy. And indeed, one of the sort of remarkable things is we are world famous for being dysfunctional. I recently called, as if you do political campaigns, you make a lot of phone calls, and I made a phone call to some local person. They picked up the phone, and they happened to be in New Zealand. And I didn't want to keep them on the phone, but he said, "Oh, I'm new in New Zealand. Can we talk later?" I'm like, "Sure." And then we just chatted for a second, and he was saying, "You know, here in New Zealand, they know about our street protests, and they know about our homelessness problem," which is amazing that even around, you know, on the other side of the planet, people are sort of aware of the fact that we are fundamentally underperforming and failing to serve our most vulnerable citizens. And then when you overlay COVID, both the public health side and the economic side, one of the questions I think we as a city have to ask ourselves is, can we afford to do this and go in the same direction for another 4 years? Mm-hmm. And I would argue that we just need to make a change. And I think my campaign has, you know, caught fire the way it has, partly because Portlanders are ready for a change. You know, that's both, it's a symbol of my success, but it's also one of the reasons why people go out every night. We are all tired of the status quo, and we want to change both the policies, and I think we want to change the culture. And, you know, even though this seems like a contentious time in Portland, thing that I think is really fascinating to me and kind of fills me with hope is that I think there is a Portland consensus, both because of my nature and the nature of campaigning. I talk to everybody, you know, from the houseless person to the person who owns a business to the person who's advocating for affordable housing to the person who's trying to build affordable housing. And they all come from unique perspectives. But I do think that Portlanders fundamentally want to build a kind, connected, caring society. They want to listen to each other. You know, when I talk to, an interesting thing is if I talk to Black Lives Matters organizers, and then I talk to people who run the city or even like rank and file cops, and ask them, you know, what's wrong with our public safety system and how would you change it? They say the same thing. You know, cops would much rather have the city invest more in prevention. And I think when people say, let's defund the police department, I think most people are really saying, let's reallocate our resources and let's invest where our values are. And our values are in things like prevention and restorative justice. What we see out there where we're actually investing so much time and energy and money, literally fighting with each other, is not the Portland way. And I hope that we take this opportunity. I think sometimes we need to have conflict, and we're having conflict now. But there also comes a moment when I hope that we take the ideas and passions that we see on the street and direct that into budgets and policies and a commitment to changing and creating a new political culture in Portland, one that values respect, engagement, where we listen to each other, where compromise is not a dirty word, and we hold each other accountable for, you know, results and our own actions.
Thank you. Can you comment on some of the recent protests, the violence, and the problem?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think a thing which is true, and we just need to recognize and acknowledge, and I think most people do, is that you have many different groups represented, you know, out on the streets at night. And, you know, some are, you know, literally moms, and some are anarchists, and some are Black Lives Matter protesters. And some are just concerned citizens who, you know, happen to sort of come down or just want a way to express that they're frankly horror at racism and the fact that it continues to exist. I also think that 90, if you're being fair, everyone recognizes that 95 to more percent of the people who are out on the streets every night are peaceful. And I think that, you know, we got to celebrate that. At the same time, you know, there is, it's also, I think, undeniable that violence happens on the streets of our Portland. And I think that any violence happens on the street, that happens on the streets of Portland, is too much, you know. Violence is really about silencing people, whether it's on the left or the right. And as I argued earlier, racism in America is fundamentally premised on and rests upon violence or the threat of violence. So as long as that's kind of part of our politics, we're never going to achieve the goals that we want. So I think it's important that our political leaders and we as individuals reject violence and vandalism in all of its forms. And I think it's unfortunate that the violence and vandalism that we see does, I think, on occasion, distract from this larger vision that we have. And I do encourage everyone to keep their eye on the ball. You know, one of the things we're trying to do here is to create a more just society, one that we can be proud to live in. And let's move together towards that goal. And there are many ways to achieve it, but I think there's a lot more consensus here than there than it may feel like. And I do fear that sometimes we lose sight of the fact that we agree on more than we disagree on. And I hope that my election will be part of helping Portland move forward to this next phase of this movement, where we make real change, where our budgets and our programs reflect the values that we have, and the political culture and tone that we bring to this discussion is one of mutual respect, and let's trust each other's unique historical experiences, and let's also trust that if we work together, we'll actually work better.
And how do you work with the many expectations of all of your different constituent groups that you are working to represent?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I think something I want to remind everyone of, and I knew it before, but now that I'm a candidate, I just feel it in my bones, is this is an incredibly difficult job. It's in many ways, I think, an impossible job. I think the way you navigate that space is being transparent in your decision making. Make it clear as to what you're thinking and why. You be inclusive. You invite everyone to the table, and you will not be able to make everyone happy. But what you can do is make sure that everyone understands where your thinking comes from. And hopefully that'll be enough to keep people at the table. I mean, I think it also means being open to compromise. We spend a lot of time kind of talking about the value of our identities, but if we are unable to accommodate those identities in our public policy making, then I think maybe somehow we have gone off track. So I think we need to honor that. But I hope and believe that I can actually make this council that we are likely to have better, because I'm a constructive colleague. I believe in core democratic values, as in, you know, democracy is not just about the votes that take place on election day or on city council. It's about the dialogue that happens as we lead up to those important moments. And I, you know, partly because I'm a teacher, I believe in facilitating that kind of dialogue. I think if we work together, If we pull together as a city, we can accomplish great things. You know, we have to both fix this public safety problem, but, you know, we also have incredible challenges and opportunities around environment. I think we can fundamentally reinvent our government to make it more responsive. One of the things I want to do is change the way we elect members of city council so that we elect them through neighborhood-based electoral districts. That way, voices from every corner of the city are represented in city council chambers. You know, we have to make progress on affordable housing, and our city will never be complete as long as people sleep on the street. So let's get serious about that problem too.
Thank you. My final question, we're just about out of time, and I just want to thank you again. We're talking with City Council candidate Mingus Maps, who's running for City Council for position 4 against Chloe Udaly. My final question is, what would you envision doing on the City Council? What would you like to see done by the council body at large regarding criminal justice reform? If you could pick two or three issues that would really be like issues that you think are achievable or that you would at least like to get started, what would they be regarding criminal justice reform in Portland?
Well, I'm going to keep it. There's some broad things that, you know, one of the tricky things about Portland is that many different institutions own a piece of criminal justice reform. So you got to talk about the police. You got to talk about what the county is doing and what the DA is doing. And I'd like to see all of us come together as a intergovernmental community to see how we work better. I'm very optimistic about the vision the new DA has brought to that job. And I look forward to checking in with Mike over time to see how his thinking evolves. But the thing that I really care about and the piece that I will have most control on City Council are the police contract and the police budget. So, you know, if you want real police reform, I think one of the things you have to do is have someone on council at this moment who understands why non-racist policing is important, who can feel that in his bones, but at the same time recognizes the importance of labor and honors the right of workers to organize, which doesn't mean sort of agreeing with every issue that labor people have, but it does mean kind of actually, you know, taking that our roles as management and labor seriously and working together constructively. So let's get that police contract reflecting what our real values are. And the second piece is let's reform that police budget. Let's have this public discussion about what we want from our public safety system, and then you know, shift dollars around to achieve that. And what I want from the public safety system is one that emphasizes restorative justice and prevention. And decenters the and has a new and enormous emphasis on providing services to the mentally ill. I think that probably half of our of what we call public safety issues are actually mental health issues, and we just have literally not created the systems for dealing with that. So let's actually, you know, we are basically stuck with a public safety system from the mid, you know, 1900s, but it's the 21st century, and we just kind of need to design what, you know, a system of relationships and programs that serve us effectively now. It's not rocket science, but it is hard work, and that's the work I'll be doing on City Council.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you. We've been talking
the same.
Tonight. We've been talking tonight with Mingus Maps. He is running for City Council. When is the election? November?
November 3rd, the same one that has the president on it. So it'll be, I think your three big votes are going to be the presidency, and that's important. We need you out there for that. We'll have a mayor's election on there, then a city council, and a bunch of important ballot measures too. So please do your research. You can go to mingusmaps.com if you want to find out more about our campaign.
Thank you, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. You too.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Thank you.
listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.